Of course, this morning, you could say the theme is sacrifice, and so very appropriate too, even before I start into my sermon, I want to honor those veterans in our midst. Yesterday, of course, was Veterans Day, and I want to ask the veterans that we have here in the congregation, would you please stand? We want to honor you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your sacrifice and for the sacrifice of so many that are serving us today in the military. Jim read, probably about 12, 15 verses. I'm actually going to be covering 88 verses, I think it was, when I counted up. I didn't want to ask Jim to read the whole text. I've never tried to bite off that much and try and preach on that. But here's the reason I'm preaching on such a large, it's basically from Mark, the middle of chapter 14 of Mark, Mark 32, all the way through Mark 15, 47. But first, I've been preaching through the Gospel of Mark. It's probably, I think I'm on about week 35 here. But I wanted to finish up before the Advent season hit, and so that I could then switch gears and go into the Advent themes. But secondly, the reason I picked such a large text to preach from is, you all know this. I mean, this is the fateful night when Jesus was there in Gethsemane praying. The soldiers came. Judas, his betrayer, came. They arrested him, took him to the Sanhedrin. The crazy mock trial. His conviction, his torture, his beating, being brought before Pilate, and sentenced then to crucifixion, and then being crucified and dying and being buried. So that is the text in summary that I want to cover. I'm not going to read through the text word for word, but I just want to draw out for us some of, not the highlights. You can't talk about highlights for an experience like this, but some of the important aspects and some of the things that we need to consider. So let me just go ahead and jump into it. If you're following along in your sermon notes, then you can see that after the intro and context, it's Gethsemane, and this is what Jim just read about. And see, I put that verse too in from Job 3:26, and you can understand, this is Job, who had lost everything and was just in a horrible state. And he says, I have no peace, no quietness. I have no rest, but only turmoil. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever experienced that dark night of the soul? Is what many of the authors call it, the dark night of the soul. This was what Jesus was experiencing in Gethsemane, when it's a horrible, horrible experience where you feel bereft of any quietness, any peace, and it's just turmoil inside. This is what Jesus was going through. This is what he went through for us. And so point A there is, it's an overwhelmed soul. So Jesus said, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow. It was just like this massive tidal wave, just overwhelming the soul. And he says, to the point of death. His heart was deeply distressed and troubled. But what was he doing when he was going through his dark night of the soul? He went to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. He must have gone there often enough that Judas, the betrayer, knew that's where he would be. He knew he would find him there. And so Jesus had frequented the Garden of Gethsemane many times. But here he was going and praying. He separated himself and was praying. And so the takeaway from this is, when you experience a dark night of the soul like Jesus, we need to turn to God in prayer. Wrestle with him. And if you don't know how to pray, there are so many wonderful psalms that will give you the words to pray, even if it's anger. My God, why have you forsaken me? Or how long, O Lord? How long will you hide your face from me? You can scream at God. You can, when your soul is being overwhelmed, take it to the Lord in prayer. But you'll notice too what Jesus did, even though he was asking God, if there's any way that this cup can be taken away from me, this cup of suffering is what he was referring to. Lord, if there's any way, and yet, not my will, but your will be done. And so at the end of the day, and through all our prayers, it's to subject ourselves consciously to that complete surrender to God's will, knowing that all things work together for the good of those who love him. It's all things will work together for good. And so it takes faith to do that act of surrender. But in the prayer then, Jesus comes back from praying, finds the disciples asleep, and he tells them, watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And so, point C, we need to overcome the flesh. Romans 8 talks about the flesh. Sometimes it's translated the sinful nature, but the Greek word is sarx. So it's the flesh. And it says the mind controlled by the flesh, it's hostile to God. It cannot please God. It cannot follow God. And there is no quiet. There is no rest for the mind that's focusing on the flesh, the mind that's focusing on the sinful nature. So the flesh being weak, we need to be so careful, and especially in those times of distress, in those times of heartache, of soul ache, we need to be careful that we're not overcome by the flesh, but instead we need to connect with God's Spirit. And so in Romans 8, it says, the mind controlled by the Spirit, on the contrary, that mind has life and peace. And that's what we need, especially in those moments, in the dark soul, the dark night of the soul. Still, the disciples fell asleep. And then Jesus was arrested. And so all of a sudden, Judas shows up with a crowd armed with swords and clubs. And Judas betrays him with a kiss. And if you really think about that, how awful. I mean, he had told the soldiers and the guards, this will be my signal to you. The one that I kiss, that's the one that you should arrest. Michael Card had it so right. He has a song called Why. Sing that first verse for you. It says, why did it have to be a friend who chose to betray the Lord? Why did he use a kiss to show them that's not what a kiss is for? Only a friend can betray a friend. A stranger has nothing to gain. And only a friend comes close enough to ever cause so much pain. Oh, isn't that true? Only a friend comes close enough to ever cause so much pain. And Judas came and betrayed him with a kiss. And all of a sudden, when the soldiers then came close, started to try and arrest Jesus, in Mark's version it says, one of the disciples pulled out a sword and cut off the ear of one of the servants. Of course, in another gospel it says it was Peter. And Peter had just, in the previous text, I think it was last week's text, he had said to Jesus, and all the disciples agree, no, we'll go to the death for you. I give Peter credit. I mean, he was willing. He pulls out a sword and actually cuts off. The sword must have glanced off and cut the ear off of one of the servants. And Jesus stops it all. And he says, am I leading a rebellion that you've come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I was with you teaching in the temple courts, and you did not arrest me. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. And then everyone deserted him and fled. So Jesus rebuked Peter and the whole crowd and stated that the scriptures had to be fulfilled. Jesus knew that that there was a greater purpose. He knew his mission, and he was determined to carry it out. And the takeaway here is sometimes God's higher purposes supersede our understanding of what's good and right. So the disciples were in complete confusion still, even though Jesus had told them, and actually several times, what was going to happen, that he was going to be arrested, that he was going to be turned over to the hands, in the hands of the Sanhedrin, that he was going to be crucified. They just couldn't grasp it. And oftentimes, our affection, and especially our love for someone, won't let us see and understand God's higher purposes. But sometimes by faith, we need to press into Romans 8:28 and know that all things, they will work together for good. Wait a second, how? Are you kidding? All things? And some of the things that we have been through are just, can be torturous. I was talking just last night with somebody. We had prayed for Joe DeShepper for many years, hadn't we? And he finally succumbed to the cancer and passed away. It was Cindy's brother-in-law, and I was talking then to her sister last night. She showed up for trivia, and I was asking her how things were. And as we had a great conversation. She's an amazing woman of faith, and I was saying, you know, a lot of Christians, it's this false assumption that because I'm a Christian, I should be exempt from suffering, therefore. That life should go easier for me. Oh, and her quick response was, are you kidding? Basically, she said, Satan is here to see that especially as Christians, we will have a harder road. And especially coming from somebody who just lost her husband, it even meant more. She could see it. She could grasp that there's higher purposes at work. And she said, he's with the Lord. What could be better than that? And one of the scriptures that we've been wrestling with in our grief share group was in the Psalms, it says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Wait, what? Repeat that. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Now, see, that, how can that be precious? Because he sees from the other side of the veil. For him, it's precious, the death of a saint, because it's a homecoming. You can imagine him watching this saint coming to him. And now, remember the prodigal son story when the prodigal's father ran out to throw his arms around him, embrace him, and kiss him? That is the welcome God gives to the saint. So it's precious to God. See? God can see on the other side of the veil. His purposes are so much. And it says, Isaiah 55:9, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts. We don't understand, and oftentimes we can't understand, but we must trust. So during that experience of the dark night of the soul, pray, wrestle, don't give in to the flesh, connect with the Spirit, and let the Spirit take you through that circumstance and bring you safely to the other side. So then Jesus is brought before the Sanhedrin, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, the Pharisees. You remember the story how Peter, he follows closely behind and is outside in the courtyard. He starts warming himself by the fire and he's trying to check out the scene and watch what's going to happen. Oh, they bring some false witnesses there to try and accuse Jesus, and none of them kind of agree. And all of a sudden, finally, chief priest just asked Jesus directly, so what do you have to say? Are you the Messiah? I jumped a little bit ahead because point 4a, sorry, and it's right there blank. Jesus, silence. So as these false witnesses are coming forward and they're accusing Jesus, and Jesus is just silent, not even trying to defend himself. But listen, 700 years before Christ was even born, Isaiah prophesied specifically about this. Isaiah 53:7 says, he was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. So they're laying all these accusations to him, and he's silent. But so many predictions, not predictions, prophecies, excuse me, about Jesus' arrest, crucifixion, death, trial. Some of them written even 950 years before he was even born. But you'll notice too at the top of your sermon notes, I had put a scripture verse up there too. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. And Peter says that should be how we handle persecution too. So all of a sudden, the chief priest just asks him directly, "Are you the Messiah?" And I put point B, Jesus' confession. He's not confessing his guilt. He's actually confessing his messiahship. And he gives them then this answer, if I can find it. "I am," said Jesus, "and you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." Why that answer? Well, because it was a direct reference to the Son of Man that was spoken of in Daniel. Again, Daniel wrote about Christ 600 years before his birth. And Daniel said, "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a Son of Man." And so this is definitely a messianic prophecy. And all the Jews knew it. The chief priests knew that when Jesus referred to himself as the Son of Man, this is what he was referring to. He said, "Before me was one like a Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed." That's the Messiah, and Jesus saying, "I am." At this, the chief priest tore his robe, said, "What more evidence do we need? What do you say?" And they said, "Crucify him." And the torture begins. Spitting on him, blindfolding him, striking him, saying, "Prophesy now." The mocking began. Peter's outside. There he is by the fire, and he's witnessing all this. And all of a sudden, at one point, one of the servant girls of the high priest says, "Now, wait a second, weren't you one of them?" No, I don't know what you're talking about." And he denies it. And a little later, she comes back and she says, "No, I'm sure it was you. You were with Jesus, the Nazarene." "No, I don't know what you're talking about." He denies it a second time. And then afterward, some of the others that were gathered around said, "Well, your accent gives you away. You're a Galilean. Surely you were one of his." "No," and he starts calling down curses. And then he starts, "Cuckoo." That's probably not a rooster, is it? Anyway. What's a rooster sound anyway? Cock-a-doodle-loo. Yeah. The rooster crows. And all of a sudden, that's the very moment when Peter realizes Jesus had said he would deny him three times before the rooster crows. And when the rooster crowed, it struck him. Have you ever failed Jesus? Have you ever felt that, the sickness in the heart? And Peter ran away, weeping. I put in there, and by the way, point five, Peter was overcome by fear. Oh, how good intentions can crumble under the stress of fear. But, you know, don't. Peter's such a good guy. He gets such a bad rap. I mean, the first time Jesus even started talking about how he was going to have to suffer and go through and die, Peter tried to pull him aside and rebuke him, and boom, Jesus turns it around and rebukes him. "Get thee behind me, Satan." Whoa. And then, of course, Peter was willing to defend him, willing to put his right life at risk, pulls out a sword there in Gethsemane, cuts off somebody's ear, and Jesus stops him. Don't you think that at this point, Peter is just discombobulated and disoriented and trying to, what's going on? And in that moment, he's overcome by fear. All good intentions can crumble when fear overtakes us. Oh, we need to pray for boldness. And those are some of the reference verses I put there under point five. We need to pray for boldness. So then they bring Jesus before Pilate the next morning. And Pilate just asks him directly, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus gives him a pretty straightforward answer. "You have said so." But Pilate sits there and listens to the chief priests and all their accusations. And as he's listening, he realizes, this just doesn't feel right. I mean, it's jealousy on their part. What are they up to? So Pilate determines he's going to try and get Jesus off. So there is a practice during the festival. Every year during the Passover festival, it was tradition that Pilate would release a prisoner to the people. And so Pilate sets it up. Says, "Tell you what." So he says to the people, and the people gather, and they make this request. And he says, "How about if I give you Barabbas?" And this guy must have been just awful. I mean, he had led an insurrection. He was a murderer. This is a bad character. "I'll give you Barabbas or Jesus. You choose." Pilate thought it was going to be obvious they'd release Jesus. And much to his dismay, no. The chief priests had stirred up the crowds, and the crowds were calling for Barabbas to be released instead of Jesus. Oh, we've never seen this before, have we? Political correctness trumps justice. Oh, we've never seen that before, have we? Yeah, political correctness trumping justice. I mean, if you just look at this politically, then you got to understand exactly where Pilate was coming from. It's just more expedient. What do you want as the governor? Do you want a riot on your hands? Or just sacrifice up this Jesus character, the one that they're calling the king of Jews, or he says he's king of the Jews. Just more expedient, more prudent. Avoid the riot. Fine. Washes his hands of it. So, Jesus then is going to be crucified. But first, he's going to be mocked. So, the soldiers, and it's all the soldiers, gather. The whole company of them. Put a purple robe on him. Weave a crown of thorns. Don't think of those little itty-bitty thorns. Imagine thorns 1 inch, 2 inches long. Woven into a crown, placed upon his head, and now they're using a rod to beat him. And they're mocking him. They're spitting him. And they're falling on their knees and paying homage to him in a mocking way. And again, 700 years before Christ, listen how clearly Isaiah prophesied about this very event. He says, "I offered my back to those who beat me, my cheeks to those who pulled out my beard. I did not hide my face from mocking and spitting." And now get this one. 700 years before, it's so graphic about what Jesus went through. It says, "There were many who were appalled at him." This is Isaiah preaching or prophesying. "There were many who were appalled at him. His appearance was so disfigured beyond that of any man, and his form marred by beyond human likeness." Jesus was disfigured during his torture. I mean, some of the people, when the Passion of Christ came out, and Mel Gibson had produced that, and they thought he had gone too far. Some of you saw that, and it was almost grotesque what Jesus looked like. Remember, after the torture? I think it was perfectly accurate. Isaiah prophesied that he would be disfigured from the beating. This is what Jesus went through for us. How can you not consider that and weep? As if crucifixion weren't enough, the humiliation that Jesus suffered was horrid. So then, Jesus was crucified. And it starts out telling about how this man from Cyrene, Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, well, must be that Alexander and Rufus were known among the Christian community. Interesting, they must have become Christians. Because here's their father, Simon of Cyrene, and Jesus is struggling with the cross. And well, of course, if you've been beaten until you are disfigured, your back is shreds, and from the crown of thorns, blood is pouring down. He was so debilitated from the beating, he couldn't carry his cross. So they grab some guy from the crowd named Simon, and they make him carry the cross. Ray Bolts, by the way, has an amazing song on this, and it's called Watch the Lamb. Maybe write that down in your notes. Google it. Look it up. I'm sure there's a video. Amazing song about Rufus and Alexander and how their dad tells them, and maybe conjecture, but how they became Christians. Wonderful song by Ray Bolts. And so they are led to Golgotha, which means the place of the skull, and Jesus is crucified. And as he's up there, they offer him wine and myrrh, probably to deaden the pain, but he refused it. And the soldiers are there at the foot of the cross dividing up his clothes. This is a game to them. This is a game. I mean, kind of like the communists. We watched that video, and the torturers, the communist torturers of Richard Wurmbrand, communism had so much, it said, strip them of their humanity. And so they're dividing up his clothes, playing, rolling the dice to see who gets what. Again, 950 years before Christ was even born, David prophesied about this in Psalm 22. Listen to this. Dogs surround me. A pack of villains encircles me. They pierce my hands and my feet. He was talking about crucifixion before crucifixion even came about. They pierce my hands and my feet. All my bones are on display. People stare and gloat over me. They divide my clothes among them and cast lots for my garments. This was all part of God's plan. He began revealing aspects about his plan almost 1,000 years before it happened. 9 a.m., the crucifixion began. And then here again, Psalm 22, 6 and 7. Another prophecy. But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by men and despised by the people. All who see me mock me. They hurl insults, shaking their heads. He trusted in the Lord. Let the Lord rescue him. Let him deliver him, since he delights in him. And so it was. Said that those who passed by were hurling insults at Jesus, shaking their heads and saying, so you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourselves. In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. He saved others, but he can't save himself. Again, wasn't crucifixion enough? But he had to suffer through all the torture of the mocking. And then he died. At noon, the darkness came over the whole land and lasted 3 hours. Y'all, this, we had an eclipse, what, about a month back, right? How long did the eclipse last? Few minutes. This was 3 hours. This was a supernatural darkness. And some people have tried to just write this off as it was an eclipse. It was not. In fact, we learned in the Intelligent Faith Conference yesterday that actually you cannot have an eclipse during the time of the Passover because the moon has to line up with the sun. Well, the moon is way over here at that time of the year. This was a supernatural event. In fact, many supernatural things happened. And all of a sudden, when Jesus cried out, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which is Aramaic for, my God, why have you forsaken me? Quote Psalm 22:1. And people think they heard Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. They heard Eloi, Eloi, thought he was calling out for Elijah. Hey, wait, maybe Elijah's going to come back. No. So somebody ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to him to drink. Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down, they said. And with a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. Where he even got the strength for that loud cry, we don't know. All of a sudden, the curtain of the temple in that moment when Jesus breathed his last was torn in two. This curtain was not some flimsy curtain. For it to be torn in two, this was, again, something supernatural and very significant. Just as Jesus' body was being torn, what does he say? What did he say the night before at the Passover meal? My body broken for you, and he tears the bread. As his body is being torn, So the curtain in the temple is being torn. What's the purpose? What's the meaning? What's the significance? The curtain in the temple was what then was the divider between the holy place and the most holy place. You could not have access to God. What was here on earth, the representation of his throne room, nobody could. Only the high priest could go in once a year with a sacrifice. That curtain was torn, and now, because of Jesus' body being torn, we are forgiven. He was the perfect sacrifice once and for all, it says in Hebrews. And now Hebrews says, and so with boldness we can come before the throne of grace. There was an earthquake. Another gospel tells us that in this time too, there was an earthquake and the stones were splitting. And so the centurion is looking on. He had seen the darkness. He had seen how Jesus had died after this cry. I doubt he saw the curtain being torn in the temple, but the earthquake. And he looks up and says, surely this man was the Son of God. So, point 9a, by the way, the curtain is torn. And so it was in Isaiah, 700 years before Christ was born. He says this. He explains to us the purpose of it all. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows. Yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed. Look down at the bottom of your sermon notes. Questions for reflection number 2. Are you convinced that Jesus' death was God's purposeful plan for our forgiveness? Do you understand that the punishment for our sins was laid upon Jesus? What then is your opinion of Jesus? That he would do that for you, suffer like that. And then Jesus was buried. And I love this part of the scripture because it tells about how Joseph of Arimathea, who was a prominent member of the council, that is the Sanhedrin, who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, went boldly to Pilate and asked for Jesus' body. So here is Joseph of Arimathea, one of the prominent members of the Sanhedrin. He risked everything to make sure that Jesus got a proper, dignified burial. The Sanhedrin had just convicted him and saw that he was crucified. What do you think the chief priest is going to think when he hears that Joseph of Arimathea has gone and asked for Jesus' body and wants to give it a proper burial? Where is your allegiance, Joseph? He had to have risked everything. So the final question for you is, what are you willing to risk for this Jesus who sacrificed everything, gave everything to you, died for you, so that he took the penalty of your sin, which is death, upon himself, that you might then have reconciliation with God? What risks would you take for this Jesus? I just want to end with, it made me think of this wonderful hymn. What wondrous love is this, O my soul, O my soul. What wondrous love is this, O my soul. What wondrous love is this that caused the Lord of bliss to bear the dreadful curse for my soul, for my soul. To bear the dreadful curse for my soul. And when from death I'm free, I'll sing on. And when from death I'm free, I'll sing on. And when from death I'm free, I'll sing and joyful be. And through eternity, I'll sing on, I'll sing on, and through eternity I'll sing on. May that be our witness through eternity, singing on. What wondrous love is this? Amen.